On today's College Football Inquirer, huge games in State College where Oregon wins it in double OT. Huge game in Athens, Georgia, where Alabama is back, baby. Also, Ole Miss beats LSU. Notre Dame crushes Arkansas. Virginia shocks Florida State. Ross Dellinger nearly gets trampled. We'll talk about it all on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. I am Andy Staples here with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. And I want to remind you, if you'd like to watch us, if you'd like to see Ross after his near-death experiences this weekend and see just the sheer look of terror that is still on his face, go to your smart TV, turn it on, find the icon for the Yahoo Sports Network, click it, and then click the College Football Inquirer. That's right. It is the Yahoo Sports Network. So you can get it on your smart TV. It'll be in your home row. You'll see all those icons. Also, if you want to watch it on your tablet, on your phone, anywhere you go, any time of day, go to yahoosports.tv and you can watch the College Football Inquirer. You can watch all of Yahoo's excellent offerings. I like Yahoo Sports Daily. A lot of fun. But, of course, I prefer the College Football Inquirer because I'm on it. Gentlemen.
Good morning.
This was an incredible weekend. Ross, you are in lovely Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. If you're, I mean, it's a capital city of a state, Stephen. So I don't know if we can, if we can include it with the lovely Commerce, Georgia, and Ardmore, Oklahoma. If it,
Elkhart, Commerce, adding it,
Harrisburg. It down. That's right.
It's going down, baby.
Yes. I am in lovely Harrisburg, about an hour and a half.
This list is going to dissuade anyone who wants to get into sports journalism.
State College. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, quite a weekend. 500 miles driven, 4 overtime periods, 2 field rushings, and 1 very tired human. It was pretty awesome. It's sort of, you kind of see on weekends like this what makes college football so great. College towns, college fan bases. From running Andy through the Virginia woods, which I can explain later,
please do.
To then being absolutely had the fear of death staring at me as the entire Oregon defense ran toward me.
Hey, dude, let me tell you something real fast.
Total gasp. Yeah,
your video.
This is a lot worse than the Zeta Tau Alpha house coming at you.
Yeah.
The entire Oregon defense.
Yeah, I don't want to discount what happened to you at Virginia, because I did think about you and I was like, oh, look, there's Ross and all his future Capitol Hill sources running through him. Like, if you're gonna have a field rush and be worried about it, I'm gonna be way more worried about like a drunk ag school, because somebody's getting an elbow. UVA, not that bad. The video you took. And maybe we can put this on our show.
Oh,
last night in State College. Hey, Martin Scorsese meme. I don't know if you guys are familiar. I don't know if you guys have Letterboxd accounts. Absolute cinema, Ross. Yeah. Your framing. No, I'm gonna say, look, that was a hell of a oneer. Okay, your framing was damn near perfect. It was as if you were like, all right, guys, I want you to come in on the third. I want you to come in over here. I want to keep the horizon here and action. Like you, that's the best. Yeah. Sports writer takes a quick video I've ever seen in terms of your
I appreciate it.
Your composition, sir.
Godfrey, those skills learned in the communications department at Mississippi State University.
Shout out. That's an ag school, right? Which would be a tougher field rush, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yes. It was pretty wild. Caught between the students and security and the players, and the students were throwing whatever they had, bottles and trash, and the players were giving Oregon players were giving a lot of middle fingers and saying a lot of bad, naughty words. And so that was, that was how the weekend ended, fittingly. But what a game, like an unbelievable atmosphere there in State College. A boring game for 3 quarters. And then it really sort of took off in the 4th quarter. But I know everybody wants to talk about James Franklin, and rightfully so, now 4-21 against top 10 teams. And what is it, 1-18 or 1-15, something like that, whatever, against top 10 Big Ten teams in his time here. So that should be talked about. But man, I was impressed with obviously Oregon's offense, but their quarterback is Dante Moore, incredibly shifty and really was fun to watch.
Andy, I'm not going to be contrarian for contrarian's sake to start this segment. Can we maybe start this off by saying that all of the stats you just provided, Ross, are true, but I don't know if this is the Penn State that you can pile on. I don't know if you guys know.
I 100% agree.
Okay, cool.
If the game ends at 17-3.
Yes, yes.
If the game ends after the third quarter, we can bury James Franklin.
Yes.
We can bury Drew Aller. We can say this is the same old Penn State. Nothing ever changes.
Yes, exactly.
But that throw to Devontae Ross in the end zone, that's the throw that you've been waiting to see from Drew Aller for 3 years.
This was not a narratively satisfying game. And so like what I do in my corner of the sports journalism is I'm always trying to tell a story to the uninitiated, right? Like I'm not trying to be pretentious here, but I tuned in the fourth quarter and I thought, okay, this is how you break all of those stat streaks that we talked about with James Franklin and Drew Aller and this offense and Penn State as a program. You also saw some of the transfers getting involved. You saw some of their free agent signees or whatever you want to say. And I thought, okay, this is the game. This is how you do it. You avenge the Big Ten championship loss. We are going to shift narrative just from the fourth quarter alone because the first half was pretty abysmal to watch, right? And that did happen. That comeback happened. The overtime lead happened. I thought the play calling by Kotelecki was really inspired the way they were running the ball and how they were running the ball, specifically in the fourth quarter. Okay. All of those things were true. However, there was just one, I wouldn't even call it an errant throw. It was just a bad read in traffic. I think it's not a moment got too big for him. Aller got better. His fourth quarter alone was something we haven't seen from him. They are fine is a strong word. Because they have, Indiana. They have Ohio State. You're in a position here to be on the lacking end of playoff eligibility. I just don't know if I want to spike on Penn State this morning because that fourth quarter alone was what you were looking for. You had one bad break in overtime. So I'm not defending James Franklin. It didn't feel like same old Penn State.
Well, I had the you know how this works, guys. You've been there. You control alt delete. What you've been writing. I started around halftime and control all delete in the late middle of the fourth quarter and then went down to the field because the whole story was, hey, no, like everything's sort of changing around me at Penn State. The weather, the stadium, new defensive coordinator, all the new funding, resources being poured in the program, all this stuff. But it's still the same old Penn State. And that was obviously the story and the narrative. And then it sort of changed on that fourth quarter. Of course, that didn't change that after 17-3, virtually the entire student section chanted fire Franklin, which of course is fairly absurd. But it just gives you a reason or a sort of a window into how frustrated the people are with the Penn State offense that had three points and 114 yards through three and a half quarters.
Understandably so. Totally get it. Yeah. I think if there was a theme this week, it's that we don't have narrative satisfaction. And look, if you are Penn State or LSU or Georgia, you lost a game that you feel like you should have won. There's so much parity at the top end now that you're still alive. I think, God, I hate to say this, like the playoff, I was thinking about it this morning going through results, like the playoff system is working. The parity is working. The portal is working to a large degree. All of these losers that we're going to talk about on the top end are still very much alive and invested. Some have some system issue. We can talk about LSU in a second. But I'm not trying to take anything away, Andy, from Oregon. I just thought Penn State left this in as good a position as you possibly could in a loss.
They did, but we need to talk about Dante Moore.
Yes.
Because I love when you have a new starter who gets in their first big game and they rise to the moment.
Yeah.
And he absolutely rose to the moment. And to see him at the end of the game, just dirt covering his entire uniform. It's not statistically the best game because the defense he was playing was awesome.
No doubt.
But whenever he needed to make a play, he made a play.
The shakeoff on the last touchdown. It's a catch and run, and so I think people are going to focus on the catch and run part of it, but there's a free rusher on him, and he just sort of olays him to then reset and make that throw. And we talked about this on Thursday. What is the value of an Oregon quarterback who hasn't been injected in the offseason as a one-year transfer? I don't know if those two things are – I don't know if these two things are similar or connected or not, but he had a level of comfort, Andy, that I thought – was representative of being big enough for the moment and being in that system, and he never looked out of control. He looked really, really good.
Yeah. And James Franklin, LeDan Lanning said afterward that, you know, called him the best quarterback in the country, which of course is a little biased, but
sure.
By the end of the season, we might all be saying the same thing. You mentioned Godfrey, he olayed the tackler. He did that so many times on Saturday night. You just felt like, man, you know, Penn State got a little bit of a rush, but he got out of the pocket and either ran for 5, 8, 10 yards or threw to an open receiver while he's, you know, bowing his back foot, running the opposite direction. It was really impressive. He was him, DeCorian Moore, the receiver, got open quite a bit downfield. And really, when you look at the statistics, you know, you feel like Oregon should have won that game by 2 touchdowns. It's just kind of how it felt and how the statistics read. But I think, though, Dan Lanning said the whiteout in the crowd didn't affect them. You know, it has to a degree. And I feel like that sort of played a role at times.
I think the pretty incredible defense on the other side played a pretty good role, too.
Yeah,
I
mean, that was.
That's the thing. Both defenses were pretty spectacular for most of the game. So Oregon, interesting road here, because in 2 weeks they play Indiana at home. That's probably their biggest challenge remaining on this schedule. If they beat Indiana, they should probably be undefeated. And it's funny because I said, nobody's going to be 12-0 anymore. If they beat Indiana, they're probably going to be 12-0.
They have, to shout out another game from yesterday, they have the Iowa-shaped problem that we described for the Hoosiers, which is that when you go to Iowa City, you often have to become Iowa to survive it.
No, they won't have to.
I mean, other than that, I'm grasping almost to sort of play devil's advocate with you. I'm grasping. After Indiana, you're walking into Indianapolis. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. DeMond Williams Jr. at the end of the road could be interesting. Going to Seattle, that's a rivalry. But I mean, Oregon's in such a great place right now. And think about this, because I know we praise Dan Lanning every time a job comes up and we're like, everybody would want Dan Lanning, but they can't get him because Oregon's got him. Look at what he's done. Every time they lose all these, like, it's not just Dylan Gabriel. I mean, they lost a first round defensive tackle last year.
Yeah.
Like, they just keep plugging back in. And this time, the offensive line was the issue because they lost some really good players to the NFL. They went in the portal. They get Isaiah World. They get several guys who can fit right in. They go get Dylan Thienemann out of the portal, who made the game-sealing interception. He was from Purdue. They just keep reloading where they are, you know, the best or the second best team in the Big Ten and maybe even the country every single year.
Yeah.
Also, is there a team in the last 3 years, 4 years since Lanning has been there that is better on fourth down?
Dude, fearless.
It's
on
like
fourth
down. Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, I talked about this last night. Do you guys remember the Oregon Washington game?
The Penix games,
Penix game. That's right.
In DeBoer's first year. It was the year Washington made the national title game.
Two years ago.
So 2 years ago, the regular season one where Lanning goes for it on 3 critical fourth downs. They don't get it on any of them. People are like, what's this guy doing? He's reckless. Well, no, he was correct in every one of those decisions.
Yes.
It just didn't execute.
And he still has that. Yeah.
They didn't get it the first time they did it last night. And I was like, uh-oh, this is that game all over again. Because they didn't get it. Penn State went for it on fourth down on the subsequent drive, did get it, and wound up kicking a field goal.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's going to be it. But then Lanning's doing it again, and they are executing. He looks like he'd be so much fun to play for.
Oh, my God. It's funny. I'm glad you brought that game up. I was going to mention that because I don't think we contextualize stuff this way. That game is, what, 3 years old now, we just said? Three seasons. Okay. Every subsequent win they have like that is a referendum on why he did make the correct decision. It just didn't pay out. Hmm. And I think this is so... I think Oregon fans are now conditioned to the aggression they're going to have in the decision-making. And Andy, to your point, because they started winning these games after those two Washington losses, this is one of the reasons people are coveting this guy.
Well, and also,
as jobs open, it's going to get worse.
The second Washington loss that year, I think this is another one that has kind of been lost to history. the second Washington loss that year, Washington four-minute offense them to death, like ran right down their throats. And that's why they went and got like a Derek Harmon and beefed up that interior defensive line. That Dan Lanning has fixed the weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that there are weaknesses, like I don't know that there's any spot fixes you can make to what Ohio State did to them in the Rose Bowl, because that might just be a historically talented team that hit its gear at the right time. But he's doing everything he can when something like that happens to correct it, and it's how they win these games now.
And the Ohio State game last year is the reason why people aren't just penciling them in as a national title favorite right now. And that's fine, because you can't really address that until you can address that. So if they see them in Indy, great. Until then, that's fine. If that's your one reservation against them, that's fine.
They're going to see each other.
Eventually. At some point,
You mentioned the playoff and how it's like created parity. There's something else the playoffs done that came up in the news conference with Dan Lanning last night, which was he was asked about the fourth downs, and he mentioned, we were really clear before the game that regardless of the result, all of the goals are still out there. Well, you couldn't say that in a 14 playoff, right? Like before a game, you couldn't say that. And now you can, so you can take more of a risk. And he said, that's what they did, right? And I think so part of the benefit of a expanded playoff is you get a mulligan or two, so you could take more risks.
Yeah. And Andy, you said an Ohio State team finding its gear at the right time post Michigan. That Ohio State team is maybe not as talented as the one last year, but the one that I saw against Washington is still working out its kinks and still messy. And then occasionally they realize, like, oh, we have the best receiver in college football. Let's just dump it off to him.
I think everything yesterday was strategic. I don't think that was we forgot about Jeremiah Smith. I think that was, we're going to be conservative in our new starter's first road game. And we're going to let the defense take care of things. And then when we need to press the Jeremiah button, we'll press it. And they pressed it right before halftime. And then you saw in the second half, Ohio State sprinkled in Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate and Brandon Ennis when they needed to just, okay, we're going to slam the door here.
Yeah.
And it was all three
of
them.
Their defense is so good.
But I don't have a problem with this as a strategy from Ryan Day.
No.
Because if your defense is that good, just let it eat.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. Look, tactically, I think what we're saying is I know I really like where the sport is going, where you can retain, you know, you can survive these losses. You can, as Ross alluded to with Lanning, you can make gambles, and everyone is still sort of in one piece. Now, look, two losses, we're going to have conversations about some of these teams in about a month. Not everybody's going to make it. But the idea that you can be this bold in September, early October, I think is better for the sport. And everyone exited Saturday, almost everyone alive, so to speak.
Yes. There's one that doesn't feel as alive, even though they only have one loss.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that in this next segment, because let's blend all the SEC together. Because I think what we talked about with the Big Ten feels different than what we're going to talk about with the SEC. The SEC has a little Big 12 flavor where
really making a mess.
There's a lot of teams that could wind up winning the SEC because the two former superpowers met last night. Played a great game, but also looked very mortal in both cases. So let's talk about the SEC when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer. We talked about what happened in State College. Now we need to go to Athens, Georgia, where Alabama snapped Georgia's 33-game home winning streak. Kalen DeBoer joining. Gentlemen, anyone? Do we know the last coach who had beaten Georgia and Athens before Kalen DeBoer?
I know it was 2019.
Mm-hmm. He ended up working at Georgia afterward. That's your hint. It was Will Muschamp.
Oh my God!
And the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Wow! So, what a good trivia question. Look at there. Yeah. Look at there, Andy.
It's way too early on Sunday morning for me to even hazard a guess.
Yeah,
full of it. Yeah. So Kalen DeBoer joining Will Muschamp. I don't think. Well, we won't go there. But Ty Simpson looked incredible. I've never seen anybody do that to Kirby Smart's defense on third and fourth down. Never.
Yeah.
Not at Alabama, not at Georgia. That is just an incredible performance by the Alabama offense when it mattered most. You had two cases. It's interesting because Georgia had its chances to win this game. I did see Georgia fans screaming, kick the field goal at Kirby, like in the comments of my show last night. And I'm, guys, no, we're not dialing back the time in football. Like, he went for it on fourth down near the goal line because he needed to. It's fine. They should have gotten it. They dropped a touchdown pass. Alabama dropped a touchdown pass. There were mistakes were made in this game, gentlemen.
13 of 19 is shocking. It really is.
The fourth down decision doesn't bother me at all. The other fourth down decision bothers me, to punt at midfield with 3:25 left. That was the one where I was like, all right, you just showed all your aggression, totally for it, didn't work out. Why are you doing this now? Why? I don't understand why they punted with 3:25 left. That was the one that my mind was blown.
I think he's thinking Alabama's not running the ball very well, so let's go ahead and do this. And it's interesting because in that last possession for Alabama, Jam Miller had his maybe two best runs of the game on first down of the first down and the second.
And
first
the second
down.
First down. Yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah, yeah. It's I was kind of blown by that. Mind blown by that. Kane Womack called a really nice defense in the fourth quarter. Hey, Ryan Grubb, this is what we thought when we got Ryan Grubb back with DeBoer, right? Which is the Florida State game becomes the aberration. Yeah. It was really well called.
Yeah, I'd like to see a clip of all 13 of those third down conversions. 13 third down conversions in 19 is crazy.
Kirby Smart would consider that cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, he was tortured. Laura Rutledge talks to him going into the half, and she said something about the last series, and he's like, you mean the entire half where we couldn't stop them on third down?
Yeah.
He's pretty pissed.
It's crazy.
I want to disparage Gunnar Stockton and the Bobo offense, but like, they still have, he's good for the occasional amazing third down throw. Like, he has a nice touch.
And I think they found something. I think they found something in the freshman running back. In Chauncey Bowens.
Bowens, yeah.
9.9 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
not bad.
That, look, when Georgia's at its best, it can just mash you up front. And it did that in spurts last night, but could not do it consistently. And I think they were having to move offensive linemen in and out. They had injuries, and you saw Alabama take advantage of that. But really, Ty Simpson just played a great game. Mm-hmm. Like, if they play this game five more times,
yeah,
it's probably 3-2. You know, wins three and somebody wins two.
Very similar to Penn State. I could get on, and we could, the same way we could jump on Franklin because the data's there. I could jump on the Georgia offense right now being 2 of 8 on third down for basically just a bad day passing the ball. But I kind of just think this is a program in progress. And I think this Georgia offense will look better down the stretch. They are still alive. Everything is okay. I know you want to beat Bama. Look, the psychic damage that this weird rivalry, whatever, we're not going to have it soon, whatever, but this does affect Georgia fans. This is why I keep going back to this talking point. So why things are so good right now. This game mattered tremendously on an emotional level for all the fans, the fan bases in the league. It was a good television product, and everybody's still alive. So I can say, hey, it doesn't really matter if you're Georgia, but the game still mattered tremendously. That's what's so nice to come out of these. Georgia's in progress.
I think Kirby is 1-7 now.
Yeah.
Against Alabama, and 107-13 against everybody else. So he was asked about that afterward. I saw his news conference where he said, well, what's their record against other teams? You know, obviously suggesting that they've been pretty good against everybody. But it does feel like, and out of the eight, Andy, I think we talked about this the last year, maybe two or three in the regular season.
Yeah.
And everything else in the national SEC championship game.
Yep.
So it's just, you do wonder though, like, you know, is this something, is this a mental thing? Like, does Kirby Smart, against some other team kick a field goal on 4th and 1, and then they, you know what? I don't know. I don't know.
I saw Georgia fans complaining that he doesn't seem to have the same killer instinct against his former employer. I don't think it's that. I think his former employer tends to have close
really
to
good football
talent.
Players.
Really good players.
And that's the difference.
That helps.
No, like if the decision-making process or like how you arrive at a narrative idea after a loss, fans should just, it's like a cooling off period is necessary. That would be bad for our business though. No, he has more of a killer instinct against his former employer, especially now. He's trying to change an entire idea against him. I'm going to attempt to transition here. You're better at this, Andy. Georgia has Kentucky, but then they have Auburn. So the next time that maybe a significant opponent, where are you at, Andy, on Auburn? I'm not digging. I'm just, you were invested.
Before we get to Auburn, is Alabama back? Like, we have to answer that question first because we saw them get thumped by Florida State. We saw them get physically manhandled by Florida State. Clearly, they are not doing that now. Like, that's not happening now. And so did Kalen DeBoer sprinkle some dust on them? Did they, or is there still concern? And my thing is, we knew they were going to get up for the Georgia game. They beat Georgia last year.
Okay, you took the idea from me.
Is Alabama the Alabama of last year, which was the big concern after the Florida State game? That will be answered in the next 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yes. Mm-hmm. They play the school that we call the quietest team in the SEC in two
the
weeks.
Doors.
And then next week they play Vandy. So Missouri mm-hmm. and Vandy in back-to-back weeks. Of course they were going to play this game well, right? Of course. Mm-hmm. Like, after the Florida State loss, this is a total referendum. Imagine if they had lost this game last night, how we would be talking about Kalen DeBoer.
Sky is falling. They're going to lose the next three. Blah, 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 blah.
Look, the SEO on Kalen DeBoer buyout would be the number one search term for college football.
Yes.
That's serious. That's how our industry works.
Yes.
Let's talk about Alabama being back. This is why I didn't think about it, Andy. You're exactly right. Hey, you want to beat Vanderbilt by 17? Physically outmatch Missouri, you're back. Going into the Tennessee game, then you're back.
Godfrey, I'm gonna amend that. Beat Vandy by one. Beat Missouri by one.
Okay.
Beat Tennessee by one.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. That's all you gotta do.
You're right. I do know this locally. I feel like I'm reporting news here that's not real news, but like, let me tell you what the vibes in Nashville are.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
They don't think they're going down there to lose.
They ain't scared.
But I'm talking about like alumni kind of wishy-washy donors throughout the years have seen this kind of rise and fall. These little attempts. Do you remember who's that poor kid that they interviewed after they beat Kansas State that year?
That's where I was going.
The linebacker or whatever is I can't remember his name.
I feel so bad for him.
That poor child.
They got confidence now, huh?
But it's different. It is. I'm telling you, the Pavia effect. This is like a more well-managed Johnny Manziel. I'm not kidding. Like, and I don't.
How you say more well-managed. It's not like
you know what I'm getting at, buddy.
A different person than Johnny Manziel. He loves to party too, but he's just.
I just said
it's well-managed.
Well. Okay, so imagine the excitement and hope there with just a better wrangling, and I'll leave it at that until the offseason. Vanderbilt feels like they can. Like, it's going to be a close game. They also feel like, we've got a puncher's chance to win this game and beat them 2 years in a row. They really feel that way.
Mm. This is going to be so much fun. What are you saying, Ross?
It is. No, I was going to do that. I was going to do the try the segue again to say one team go 13 of 19 on third down. And then in this next game, we have one team go 0 for 13. On third down, did the Auburn Tigers against Texas A&M in some really super questionable play calls, probably late in that game, especially from a one Hugh Freeze, who here we are, and I know the schedule's been hard, but here we are in year three of the experiment, and they're, 3-2?
And the defense is good.
Yeah.
Like, You held Texas A&M to 16 points. This is the same Texas A&M team that scored 41 on Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So your defense did its job. Your offense failed again. For the second week in a row, your offense failed. In fact, your defense scored your touchdown for you because they had an interception
return to the
1 yard line, and then Jackson Arnold just runs it in.
Right.
this is getting bad for Hugh. And it's interesting because they were right there with two teams that we think are very good. And so it shouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world. Like Marcus Freeman has lost two games this year to teams that we thought were very good.
Okay.
But if this continues offensively, Auburn is staring down the barrel of 7-5 or 6-6. And that's not good enough when Hugh Freeze has one of the more manageable buyouts in the SEC.
So let me double down. 14 sacks on Jackson Arnold in 2 weeks. And Ross, 3 of 27 on third down when you put the last two games together.
Oof.
I don't want to take anything away from Oklahoma. But Andy, we talked about this, and I agreed with you, that Oklahoma's front was going to be more menacing and more brutal than what they would see. And A&M was still pretty damn good.
Because Jackson Arnold will not throw the ball. He does not get the ball out on time. And that
was the quarterback you chose in the portal.
Remember the clip of Hugh Freeze that went viral in the preseason where he's slamming his visor down because they're in a Pascal drill and Jackson Arnold doesn't get the ball out against air?
I mean,
it's your job, person who gets paid millions of dollars. If that frustrates you and if you don't want to see that in the games, to either fix it or go to one of the other quarterbacks you acquired. Because remember, you acquired Stanford starter from last year, Ashton Daniels. He's there. You also got Deuce Knight. You flipped him away from Notre Dame. He's a true freshman. Is he ready? Probably not. Does he give you a better chance to win? Evaluate that, because you have to win some of these games. Like, Georgia's coming up. You kind of maybe have to beat Georgia, which... must win against Georgia is a pretty terrible place to be.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to set up a second ago. Wonder if Freeze was golfing this week. Wonder if anyone can answer that locally in the Auburn area.
It's almost as if the
wonder
gossips,
if anyone texted me that
the same gossips were texting the same people. About that sort of thing.
hey, Andy, Marshall Reed.
Though. I have no proof of anything. I haven't checked it. I don't know if any scores have been posted.
I might have it, but I'm not in that game anymore. Marshall Reed, love him.
He's real good.
Love him.
Real
good. Had it like I look. I know it was a 6-point. Like you said, 16 points. It was ruddy. Auburn's defense is the thing that's actually worth talking about. Like that's the positive. But I really
Auburn's defense is awesome.
Man, I like the way A&M setting up down the stretch.
Because Texas A&M's offense is explosive. The two receivers they got out of the portal, Mario Craver, Casey Concepcion, are excellent. Le'Veon Moss, we're not talking about him at all. And this may be one of the best running backs in the country.
Yeah, when is A&M going to be not going to be favored? I mean, maybe at Austin, the last game of the year, maybe at when they play in Baton Rouge, October 25th. So there you go. It's LSU, Texas, and everybody in between is...
They got State next week.
They'll be favored probably.
But they got Missouri. They're at Missouri, too. Yeah, there's a chance they're not favored in that game.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, you thought the Florida game was going to be tougher. Texas is going to tenderize Florida. Mm-hmm. And even if Florida was good, Texas was going to tenderize them going into the A&M game. At LSU, boy, that could be...
They match up.
The show we do the day after that game could be really interesting.
They match up perfectly against LSU right now for what they do and what LSU can't.
Well, they have a quarterback who can run, and spoiler alert, LSU still can't deal with a running quarterback.
Good segue.
Trying. LSU, I'm trying. Trying to earn my
run the ball, or and so cannot move the ball much at all. Rebels with a big win. I got to watch a little bit of that one in the press box when I got out there in State College in the second half. And I'm sure there were some – I noticed that Brian Kelly didn't rip anybody for asking about the offense this game.
PSA to coaches nationwide, don't go after the media in the first month. You don't know if you're going to need to save this or if your jackassery quotient is going to increase, because we saw Dabo do it a week too early and then he lost to Cuse. And now we've seen BK basically kind of certify the question that was asked that he jumped on.
Yeah.
Because the exact same problems are persisted. It's really simple here. I think Nuss is not healthy. Like, I don't think
he can throw the
ball
correctly.
Well, and they
acknowledged that he was hurt after the Florida game.
Yeah,
it's
but this is bad.
It's like they were keeping that in a jar just in case it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, it was
like,
an ace card. Yeah. Yes, it was an ace card. But I think whatever the situation is, they obviously feel better with a whatever percent he is versus the backup situation. but also they can't run the ball either. I think an oblique injury, I asked a trainer about this week. It's no different than like how it really play. An oblique injury plagues a major league hitter. I mean, it can plague them for the entire rest of a season because of the amount of torque
throwing
you're creating.
A football is a rotational movement.
Exactly.
If you have an oblique injury, you are aggravating it every single time you throw.
Yeah, and I think casual fans need to hear that because, it's not a shoulder, it's not a knee. You know, Nuss not the most mobile quarterback anyway, but I'm telling you, the torque on some of those passes, he made some questionable, he had some questionable decisions in his throws yesterday. There was a lot of maybe not throwing into double or triple coverage, but bad zones. But still, the ball is not getting there the way it should. And I think that when you have this problem and you have this really good defense on the other side of the ball, which I want to talk about, you have to be able to run to compensate for the shortcoming of an injured quarterback. And they can't do that. Now, we talked about this on Thursday to flip it over on the other side. I really like Blake Baker's defense. I really like what they do. But it was really interesting to watch that chess match with Lane because there was one rushing touchdown for Ole Miss where they had finally figured out where his favorite rush lanes were and where they were coming, and they were just sidestepping it in the run game, Andy. I thought that was like, that's great chess to watch that stuff happen. It's funny. The knock on Brian Kelly and LSU amongst his greatest detractors was that he wasted Jaden Daniels with a bad defense. They're about to waste a really good defense with an offense that can't get out of first gear.
Although, is it a really good defense, though? Because a really good defense would not have allowed Ole Miss to do what it did.
I think Ole Miss is really freaking good. And I try to be extra hypercritical of the alma mater. But like, this is a...
Ole Miss is really freaking good. And here's the thing.
The Ferris State quarterback is a Heisman candidate right now. And that's a real conversation. Like
that's a big...
His numbers are stupid.
But also... There's a, you know, team after the team situation going on here. And we've seen this, and I've talked about it, like Tennessee's the best example of this in the 90s. Peyton Manning's last year, 97, that's supposed to be the team. They go lose to Florida.
Right.
They don't wind up being, and then it's like, oh, well, in 99, that's when Travis Henry will be, you know, fully of age, and this team will be ready to go. No, they won it in 98. Martin's first year as a starter. It wasn't supposed to happen, but they did. Last year was supposed to be the team for Ole Miss. I was at the game in Gainesville. They lost. Like Jackson Dart's crying. Lane Kiffin has the 1,000-yard stare. Like this was the best I could do, and I can't make the playoff. I don't understand. Well, guess what? It wasn't necessarily the best you could do at Ole Miss. Like this team's probably better than that team,
even if
the individual parts aren't as good.
Even with the loss in the defense, personnel wise, you think that?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I doubly
agree. The defense is figuring it out. Like I was a little worried about this defense at first, watching them against Kentucky and against
Kentucky
Arkansas.
Scored a lot of points against them. Like
for Kentucky, yes.
Correct. Yeah. Sorry. By Kentucky standards.
Yeah, but Tulane and LSU, now I'm looking at it like, okay, Pete Golding's figured some stuff out.
He did a nice job adjusting. And also, this was fluky. This should have been a bigger win for Ole Miss. This was a very fluky game. There was the red zone fumble on the reception in the middle.
14 penalties on Ole Miss.
They look sloppy as hell. There were some weird calls in there, but nothing where I'd say it was the officiating.
Yeah, they were sloppy. I'm not criticizing the officiating. Ole Miss played a game that I'm sure the coaching staff is going to rip the players for.
They should.
In film.
But the first LSU touchdown too is like, you know,
fluky.
The bounce fluke. Like this probably should have been more of a 2-touchdown win for Ole Miss.
We're talking a lot about third and fourth downs.
10
of 18. Ole Miss was 10 of 18 on third and fourth down. Also, and maybe this isn't the greatest comparison, but I think about the time that Lane was at Alabama and the quarterbacks he had there, Blake Sims. Jay Coker, Blake Barnett.
Blake Barnett was supplanted by Jalen Hurts very quickly.
Hurts,
Blake Barnett played a quarter, and then Jalen Hurts came.
Hurts Tua is Sark. I think
sort of just thinking.
Well,
it's
Brian Daboll was Hurts Tua, but Kiffin's last year was Jalen's freshman year.
Was whatever happened Barnett to Brian and then Hurts? Yeah, I'm just thinking of quarterbacks that you just didn't expect to, you know, be like Heisman type of contenders that Lane has sort of turned
Trinidad
into that.
Trinidad Shambliss is you know, just,
dude,
his story is unbelievable. He was going to, so Ferris State wins the D2 national title. everybody wants a piece of the Ferris State offense. Like, I remember, you know, following our transfer portal tracker, and like it felt like a different Ferris State player was hitting the portal every day because they were so good on offense, and everybody in the FBS wanted a piece of what Ferris State was doing. So Temple was going to bring him in as their starting quarterback. And it sounds like some of the other schools, there was a good story, I believe, is Chris Hummer at 24/7 wrote it. And Richard Johnson. So they, a lot of schools backed off him because they're like, oh, well, he's going to be a starter. So we're not going to recruit him as a backup. Ole Miss is like, screw that. We'll recruit him as a backup. So he takes the visit to Oxford before he's supposed to take the visit to Philadelphia. He never goes to Philadelphia. And like everybody just assumed, other than Lane Kiffin, that this guy wouldn't take money to be a backup. And then he did. He gets thrust in game two, and all of a sudden, he might be better than the starter. But oh, by the way, Austin Simmons is actually still really good.
Yeah.
And now you've got to figure out what to do. Lane got asked about it. He's like, I got a bye week. I don't have to worry about that now.
Class.
Right.
Oh, man. So,
but it's a good problem to have. It's a champagne problem, as Taylor Swift would say.
Yeah, fairly muted response too from the troll god. I mean, like, he did tweet out the photo of the quote from Kelly, but like that was just a sort of mediocre quote from Kelly.
Well, he also asked. He said he's going to go find Whit Weeks and see if the over hit.
Yeah, the whole take the over thing I thought was like that was fun. It was innocuous.
Did you see Landry Kiffin did indeed root for Ole Miss as Lane predicted, but
got to pick dad.
had the number 40 patch on her dress to support
blood over boys, boyfriend Andy. Blood over boys.
That's right.
Blood over boys.
One more game that happened in an SEC stadium that was not an SEC game that we probably need to address. Notre Dame
pig pooey.
Yeah, woo pig pooey.
Not great.
Notre Dame crushes Arkansas. Notre Dame's fine.
Yep.
Arkansas's defense is really bad. Notre Dame averaged about 1 million yards a play. The empty seats at halftime told the story. I think we're probably, you know, we got caught on Tuesday. We recorded a show and then Mike Gundy got fired. I would imagine something happens with Sam Pittman either by the time this episode drops or before our show on Tuesday.
I've never done this live, but I have a little thing on Twitter and let me see how wide I can get them open this morning. Get the bags out. Yeah. This isn't sensational. Here's what we should do. Everybody, we all work for Arkansas for a second. Here's what we're going to do, guys. Thank you tremendously for rescuing this program. It was the least talented SEC roster. I had four coaches tell me that in one offseason. It was the least talented SEC roster they'd ever seen under Chad Morris, ever. And that does include like Vanderbilt and stuff, okay? You made them respectable again. There are a couple big wins in there, all right? They went bowling. They're functional. He, I think, is so great for the culture there at Arkansas. He is a phenomenal, he could be a phenomenal fundraiser and extension of the program. You know, we don't build him a statue necessarily. I'm not saying Arkansas has that low of a standard because of what he's won versus their history. I'm just saying, let's graduate you into a corner office. Thank you so much, Sam, and your beautiful hog. I mean, he has a hog statue himself, right? Out at the lake. Okay.
Yes.
This man needs to be or Miller Lite. We don't know. He's a Coors Light guy. I'm sorry. That's a big thing. Like some people are very brand loyal to like the domestic pills.
That's right.
I don't want to besmirch a Coors Light man or as a Miller Light man. Hey, let's graduate you into a fundraising role. Kind of a Spurrier Florida thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of it.
He'd be
a couple
perfect
other,
for that, wouldn't
yeah.
he? Like this an ambassador. Is what personality.
Yeah, an ambassador. You know? Correct. Thank you. Then we're going to go out and we're going to go conduct an aggressive search. I don't want to use the time that we have left on the show today to address the idea of this turnkey Petrino nonsense, because the idea that Arkansas wouldn't go out and exhaust all their options as an
SEC
program.
To try to get Rhett Lashley. Rhett Lashley's from Springdale. He's a native son.
Andy, just read the last 10 pages of the book first.
Yeah, we can argue on a weekday show about why you should stay at SMU if Arkansas comes. But yeah. That's a weekday show.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yes. And but maybe not. It depends on your pride and your ego. But look, as far as Sam Pittman goes, thank you so much. It's time to transition. He was maybe one of the best bridge coaches I've ever seen, because when he took that job, it was the dregs of the SEC. Yeah. And he's made them respectable again. So thank you. let's figure out the next chapter. What I'm saying, it doesn't always have to be acrimonious.
Yeah. On the flip side, I feel like every time I was looking up or going back to this game to see what was happening, CJ Carr was making some incredible play. First year starter, second year at Notre Dame, obviously quarterback, Lloyd Carr's grandson. We saw flashes of him,
man,
the first couple of weeks in the losses to Miami and then the losses to Texas A&M, both of which I was at. And he, like, you know, we saw the flashes. In this one, like, there was a lot of flashes, right? He ended up 22 of 30 and 350, four touchdowns. Gosh, this two-headed monster that the Notre Dame has running the football.
The price of love.
And obviously love. Yeah, man. This is now you could start to see, like, Andy, I think we talked about this after Notre Dame's second loss, after the A&M loss, you could start to see, wait a second, maybe they can go on a run again like they did last year, go 10-2 and get in this thing.
All the angry people about them, first off, don't worry about rankings. I don't know how many times I have to say this on the show, but if you were really incensed that an 0-2 or a 1-2 Notre Dame was ranked, this is why. It was going to shake out. And they fall under the category of these other teams we talked about. It's like they're going to improve down the stretch. They're going to figure it out and be in the conversation. And yeah, Ross, like, schedule-wise, things are okay for a minute. They're going to be fine against Boise.
Yeah, they are going to be fine. The question is, like, USC losing, and we can talk about this when we come back.
Man, I love
that USC
game.
Losing hurts them.
Yeah.
They need the teams on their schedule to be good.
Yeah.
And, like, USC going to Illinois and losing is not great for them. Not just because of USC losing to Illinois, because of what it portends.
Yeah.
In fact, let's talk about that when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and when we left off, we were talking about what Notre Dame needs, and that's for its opponents down the stretch to have very good seasons. One particular opponent, in fact, probably the gold standard of Notre Dame opponents, fell to defeat yesterday in Champaign, Illinois. I joke that the sun never shines in Champaign, but it was very shiny on Saturday as Illinois walked off USC in a game where USC was dead and buried. They come back. Mekhi Lemon is spectacular, the receiver. But you had another situation for a second year in a row where a Big Ten opponent had to get down the field on USC at the end of the game and just ran the ball down the field on them. It was Michigan last year. That was a little more dramatic, more obvious because Michigan had to get in the end zone. Illinois just had to set up a field goal. But guys, at what point does Lincoln Riley's USC stop letting people just ram it down their throats?
Parker Fleming, our buddy Stats of War, I was asking him, I watched when a game is like that and it's back and forth and bang, bang, and I'm trying to understand some more nuance of it, I'll just go to the quants and be like, does anything stand out here? And he just said, like, EPA is not going to show it because of the big fumbles. But USC got bodied by the run game. That was the takeaway here.
Yes. Yes, there were two fumbles at the goal line, one of which might not have actually been a fumble.
Yeah, that was a bad review.
Yeah. So imagine if we could have heard it and could have heard them screwing it up.
I knew you were going to bring that up. Yeah, I thought about it because of how well it went in the other situations. Although I'd be really curious to see what the ACC refs said about that missed offsides that cost Wake Forest the game. Mm-hmm. USC didn't have as many explosive plays. Illinois had a bevy of them. I'm not going to do the Lincoln bit about kickoff times. That can wait because there's so much football that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
But
let's,
man,
do that on Tuesday.
You're going to bury Lincoln on Tuesday.
Out, like, no, 25 minutes for that one.
Just, it's just like Dabo and BK, like, just be tactical when you decide to say that kind of stuff in the media. Like, yeah, you should have said after.
That was pre-excuse making. And he thinks that's a good idea.
Lincoln,
like,
that is a Lincoln Riley signature, pre-excuse making.
Pre-excuse-making.
Illinois, I'm back on Luke Altmaier again. It's like I'm smoking again. I'm sorry. I'll try and quit.
That 53-point loss didn't chase you away?
No. Coming back on USC at home, leading the drive, the walk-off kick. I was like, I love him.
I could not watch hardly any of this one. So, I mean, basically, Illinois won the line of scrimmage pretty handily, I'm assuming.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. And USC, great comeback. Jane Mayabo was excellent down the stretch.
Yeah, his numbers are great.
To praise Lincoln Riley, he did an incredible job of matching up Mekhi Lemon, who's their best receiver, on Illinois' weakest cover
11,
guy.
11 over 151.
Over again.
Okay. Here's the USC luck in a sense. The beautifully executed trick play that's a touchdown pass.
Oh,
it's the backup center who comes in. Was that his first play, Andy? Or his like second
play? It was like
his
second or third. Yeah.
The backup center essentially is just kind of drifting, kind of lost, and is a little too far downfield and negates the play. That is kind of USC in a nutshell right now.
But see, that's one thing, because we can say, oh, okay, the bad review, the fumble that wasn't a fumble,
yeah,
that cost Illinois a touchdown.
That sucks.
Like, that's kind of a wash, those two plays. Kind of a wash.
Yeah.
And then, but USC getting bodied is not a wash. And by the way, who does USC play in its next two games? Michigan and Notre Dame.
Oh, boy.
Who are
Yeef.
The titanium version of what Illinois just did to you.
Yeah, so if the numbers guy that I texted, Parker, says you got bodied by Illinois in the run game, good luck.
Yeah,
we just talked about Price and Love, and then, I mean,
double-bodied about to come.
Yeah, dude, Michigan is the run offense from hell. Oof. Like, enjoy that, guys.
Because Michigan's going to run it at you, and then every once in a while, one of those runs is going to pop for 70 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I preseason was like really, I thought this was going to be the turnaround year because the personnel was going to be better up front for USC than it had been. Mm. I wasn't saying like it was the Pete Carroll era was back or anything, but I kind of had a working theory. I think we talked about this of like year two defensive coordinators, when you get your personnel, because we did talk about this with Blake Baker, like he has the pieces he needs. It has not really shown up that way yet for USC. And if you can't stop the run.
Well, Stewart on the fumble that wasn't a fumble made a big play, like recovered the fumble. He's playing great. He's a true freshman. He reclassified. So they weren't actually recruiting the way they're supposed to recruit until Chad Bowden, the GM, got there.
Yeah.
And so they're not going to start bringing in classes like you're supposed to bring in to actually try to win the Big Ten until 26. So you're talking about freshmen next year. Jakeem Stewart's kind of the first wave of that this year. But it's not going to happen. Like, you're not rescuing that this year. And you're probably not rescuing that with true freshmen next year.
No. And by the way, just to go macro for a second, you guys would probably agree with me. Let's say they lose the next two and they still have Oregon and they get out of the season as a 4 or 5 loss team. Guys, it ain't happening. It's a ton of money they owe him.
Like, yeah, they don't have
the money. They're going to see this through.
No. Like $80 million, isn't it?
Yeah, and adding the GM when they did is evidence that they're going to try and take a long view approach to this. So this is one where maybe I'm talking to an audience 3 weeks from now with those games coming up, but like it ain't happening, guys. Like they're gonna try everything for him.
Yeah, they don't have a choice. And the thing is, give him a real roster like, you know, a Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State and Oregon has.
Yeah.
He's going to be pretty good with it, but he doesn't have the appetite to recruit it. So you have to bring in the people who will recruit it for him.
Which is why some would argue he went to Los Angeles instead of Baton Rouge or other places. That's
why some would anybody argue. With a functioning brain cell knows he ran screaming from the SEC because he didn't have the appetite to recruit there.
Yeah, but that's like a Dan Mullen thing. Like, that's going to chase you for the duration of the career. Like, you.
Well, the problem is when you wind up in the Big Ten, you have to be able. You have to be able to do that. Like, you have to be able to recruit the same way. Like, it's not like Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State are any different. In fact, they're probably better than those SEC counterparts now.
I would assume. That when he took that gig, obviously they knew where the Los Angeles schools were going. They knew what kind of team he would have to build. I would assume he didn't think it was the 12 to 15 years ago USC, where by default you're better than, 85% of the Pac-12, you know, by the time spring practice starts. But Heritage Hall works in mysterious ways. They're not going to listen to outside criticism sometimes. I think he's fine. They're like 4 years in progress. Like, it's going to be a long construction period.
It's really frustrating for their fans because they keep thinking this is the year it's going to change. And, like, they got really mad at me. I went on Dan Patrick before the season, and they're like, Dan asked me, what about USC this year? I'm like, I don't think they're thinking this is the year. I think they're kind of looking ahead. And the USC fans are, what are you talking about? We're really excited about this year. I'm like, your coaching staff isn't.
Yeah, be excited. That's fine. But, like, also be realistic. Yeah, yeah.
So, we'll see. But the next two games could be very rough if what we saw against Illinois is really them. You mentioned, Godfrey, Georgia Tech and Wake Forest.
Great game.
Let's talk about that. Ross, I don't know if you got to see a whole lot of that. That was
one
of the better early window games.
Really good.
Georgia Tech's playing from behind the entire time.
Yes, sir.
They finally end up winning. Haynes King scores in overtime. They get an interception it was double overtime. Georgia Tech intercepts the 2-point conversion attempt.
Yeah.
That's how they win, because Wake Forest is like, hey, we're gonna try to win this and get out of here. Oh no, it was single overtime.
No, it was the first overtime, and Wake elected to go for two. Yeah. And Ashford, by the way, I get played his heart out. Robbie Ashford played his butt off.
Really, he got knocked out for a minute, and Deshaun Purdy had to come in. And I think Jake Dickert's doing a great job there. Yeah. I gave out Wake over 4.5 wins when the total came out in April or May, and they're gonna go over 4.5 wins.
I thought he would be a great hire. I thought he was a great hire for them. I didn't think he would show up this year because of the roster, and they have overachieved relative to their opponents. A second largest comeback win in program history for Tech, but I also feel like I feel like this is like the 10th time we've seen Tech do this. I know if you go back to week one, the Colorado fumbles and stuff like that, like, they really like to make it hard on themselves.
So somebody asked me last night, did they get exposed as frauds? And I'm like, no. I think they won, as our friends Dan Rubenstein and Ty Hildebrand at the Solid Verbal say, they won their clunker. Like, look at the rest of the schedule for them.
But Andy, they
Virginia like Tech, Duke, Syracuse, NC State, Boston College, Pitt before the Georgia game. Like, Duke is playing really well the last couple of weeks. They might be the only team that can beat them the rest of the way.
They make clunkers. I know you're talking about clunker relative to the opponent's quality, and like, Wake is obviously an inferior team relative to like Clemson, but Colorado, they play in these games. You should commend the resiliency of a team that can come back when you're down 14 plus as frequently as they do.
Yeah.
But they do make it really hard on themselves. Like, I fully expect them to go into Virginia Tech in 2 weeks and probably not blow them out.
Who somehow won yesterday. Yeah. Like, I just saw that score. Yeah. I was like, what? Virginia Tech beat NC State? It was on the road too, wasn't it?
It's so we could have this conversation later, but it's like,
what?
Time for Doran to go to the lake.
Mm.
Yeah.
He's definitely a lake guy, right?
Oh, he's definitely a lake guy.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brent Key, most lake guy in the world, by the way. I know he's O-line, but O-line in D.C. is basically the same philosophy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That man doesn't want to talk to anybody.
Oh, he's from Birmingham. He played O-line for Georgia Tech. Yeah. Like,
he's a lake guy.
He is a lake guy through and through.
Yeah.
You want to keep it in the ACC and talk about what happened in lovely Charlottesville.
Let's do it. Yeah, we got to talk about that because I saw that poor Florida State receiver. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how you. I was like, "Is he okay?"
You just get down and cover yourself. No kidding. Oof, I mean, like, no joke.
Yeah. Afterward, Mike Norvell said everybody was accounted for and healthy, which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
I did see. The things I saw, and I was in the opposite end zone of the students, thankfully. But it was still pretty wild. But the things I saw in that field, a man gushing blood from his nose, who. Mm-hmm. A young man, a student, pretty clearly, who didn't quite care about his nose gushing blood because he was so happy at the big win over Florida State. One guy running through with like a lit cigarette, just smoking on the field.
That would have been me.
And then
I paid good money for this. I put it out.
That's right. Yeah. Remember that time we smoked?
But if
on
you're
the
gonna
field?
Like break the rules, break the law, I guess.
Yeah.
You might as well do it in the field storming where. You know, nobody really
smoke
cares.
Smoke them if you got them. That's the saying.
Yeah, that's right. And then a poor woman who was kind of wheeled out on a stretcher at some point. So there was a lot of I don't think anybody was seriously injured, but there's going to be a lot made because some ACC officials were at the game. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips and some others were at the game. And I think there's probably going to be a conversation to be had about Virginia's Hill, where the students gather. And then there's nothing in between the start of the hill and the field. Because oftentimes, as you guys know, they don't really need anything there because there's either not that many students there or they certainly don't win for them to rush the field. But that was an incredible environment and awesome game, and didn't quite go as I anticipated, as I was there to not write live on the game, but I ended up going to my my car running through the Virginia woods on campus there through a trail of marijuana smoke and celebrating students.
Thomas Jefferson
get to my
would never. Were they was it third years or fourth years smoking the weed?
I have no idea.
On grounds.
Yeah, on grounds. Sorry. That's right. Hanging out the windows of dorms and all that good stuff to get to my car where my computer was, because I left it, silly me, because I wasn't going to write live. And then, I needed to hurriedly write live.
This is the place that incubated Dave Matthews. You shouldn't be too shocked. They got a little gaunch.
But that was, couple of shocking things about that game was the lack of pressure from Florida State up front. I mean, that going into the game, Virginia was down, I think, three projected offensive line starters from preseason that had got hurt either in preseason or so far this year. Their starting center included, and Florida State didn't get any pressure. And then got run over. They ran the ball whenever they wanted to. So really mixed direction, like really great stuff from Tony Elliott's staff. And now you've got to think about the Florida State-Miami game in a little different way. Next week, the pressure is on more than ever to sort of turn around for Novell and them and win that one.
I have not watched a ton of Virginia football the last couple of years, but that felt like the proof of concept that when you hired Tony Elliott, not beating Florida State in so much as that offense. And then, Andy, I couldn't help but think about this game in context with Miami coming up. Of course, it looks like every deficiency that they put out on Friday night would be something that this current Miami team could exploit greatly, which is why I think it's going to be a way closer game, because we're all going to assume.
Of course. Everyone's going to assume because this happened, logic. Miami's going to go to roll Florida State.
No.
Watch that's right. it be nope. like you overtime. Know it's going like, it, yeah, to be yeah, a good
yeah,
game, I
yeah,
bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's you for sure. So I spent a day or so there in Virginia and met with some of their athletic administration folks and saw their new football building. I never realized how sort of incredibly far behind funding and facilities that they were. I mean, just last year, I think they were the only, maybe the only power conference team that didn't have their own football facility. Just a few years ago, they had one practice field. Gasp! That a school would have just one football practice field. They shared a weight room.
That'll get you arrested in Alabama.
Right. Yeah, that's right. No NIL funding, all that stuff. And sort of, but it's starting to change, right? They have like, whatever, two or three practice fields now. They have their own facility that I got a tour of that was pretty incredible, with their own weight room. And this offseason, at an agent, a player agent back in March or April, say something to me that just left me shocked, which was, man, Virginia's really spending money in the portal. I was like, what? Virginia? And lo and behold, we're starting to see it a little bit on the field, the resources, the investments there. And, they gave Tony Elliott sort of another year this season. And lo and behold, things are – and look, let's also mention, because it's everywhere there still, is that 3 years ago, dealing with three football players who were shot and killed on a bus while returning from a class trip is something that very much – still resonates there. They've dealt with a lot in his tenure. And I think this was him and Carla Williams, the AD there, sort of embraced and had an emotional sort of deal in the tunnel. And I think it was partly because it's like, man, all of that we've dealt with, being behind and the deaths and the COVID was his very first season. And just trying to get to this point where they can compete with a top 10 program, and they did.
I think this may be one of the most remarkable hot seat escapes of my career. Mm. In terms of like consensus, dead to rights, moving on. Also, just to kind of take everybody behind the veil a little bit, these gentlemen will know what I'm talking about. When you enter the season as a program where your coach is very firmly on the hot seat, you start having preliminary discussions with agents, with search firms. You sort of very quietly kind of get your, you get aligned, if you will. And so that's very much where Virginia was. Elliot was the first person that people mentioned when I was going conference by conference, sort of setting this up in the off season in the summer. I've never seen one quite like this, Ross. I'm not saying they couldn't, you know, lose a handful more games. They probably will, but this was unbelievable relative to what this program had put out under him in the previous years.
I think really, they made a decision last year, right? Go back to that NIL sort of funding. I mean, they are obviously one of the things Carla Williams did when she got there was start to address the facilities situation, which is, again, was really far behind. But like last year, I think they addressed the like, okay, we're going to invest in this guy with the roster. And they did. And they got like six or seven offensive linemen out of
the portal. They got a quarterback.
Think
about the Chandler Morris situation. Chandler Morris on his fourth school. Goes to Oklahoma, TCU, North Texas, now Virginia. Who's Chandler Morris's dad?
Chad.
What did Chad Morris used to do before he became a head coach?
Drive a school bus?
He did work at a high school, but then he became the OC at Tulsa, and then he became the OC at Clemson, where he taught Tony Elliott this offense that Tony Elliott now runs.
Look at there.
For his son. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I can't get over it again to say enough things. This is a very much a comp to Vanderbilt. If you're an SEC fan listening to this, or actually, you know where I want to go with this. Congratulations on your really fancy buildings, Northwestern. And I'm sure your stadium's going to be awesome. My tongue is firmly in cheek, but did you hear Ross? He said facilities, but he also said players. So Vanderbilt had this exact same situation, Ross, because I live nearby and I see it. I see the cranes where, hey, our stadium's woefully outdated. There's a great quote from an LSU player from a couple years ago that I can't actually use on this show about what their visiting locker room was like. And then he said it live. It kind of crept into the post-game room. Vanderbilt did all those things, but they also got behind a guy who was losing a lot that they liked a lot in Clark Lee, an alumnus, a native son, and said, hey, what if we did this whole NIL thing? And gave this otherwise smart career coordinator turned head coach some really good players and see if he maybe didn't forget how to coach football.
Mm-hmm.
Funny how that works. Cough, cough, Wisconsin, cough, cough.
Northwestern.
Cough, cough.
Hey, before we leave, cough, Andy, before we leave, guys, did you guys see the San Diego State score?
Yes, I did. And it is a crime against humanity.
6-3 San Diego State. Beat Northern Illinois. They had 19, I think. So they had 19 straight possessions without a score.
Ross,
19 straight possessions without a score.
Do you know that Kent State, that his offense is last year, Sean Lewis's last year at Kent State as head coach before he had an ill-fated run as play caller for Deion in Colorado, running as fast and as efficiently as Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss offense? I don't know what is going on in San Diego.
Yeah. Well, they beat Cal 34-0 the week before, and then
bizarre.
Cal goes...
Yeah.
And beats
Boston College,
on a not last minute, but close to last minute, JKS dime. Like, so Aztecs may just be a team of destiny,
I guess.
And how they lost to Washington State, which then got rolled by North Texas, we'll never know. But that is the beauty and the majesty of this sport, and that is why we do this. And we're going to do it again on Tuesday and on Thursday and again next Sunday. So we'll talk to you on Tuesday.